On Thursday, May the 15th, 2014, the fourth symposium of the sentencing and penal decision making of the European Society of Criminology was held at the University of Reims. I was very happy to host it, and my presentation on the 15th was about who supports resistance in France. So this was the title with question. I started by presenting on my first slide, which you can picture because I uploaded the slide on my website as well, with the studies that I have conducted on who works and resistance in France for the last 5 years. I'm still studying who works in French probation, supervision and release, and I've got a series of theoretical lenses. The main one is resistance, because the question is who does resistance, but obviously in the background there's also the legitimacy of justice literature, the therapeutic jurisprudence literature, but I'm sometimes drawn to CCPs and what works as well. So I have conducted a series of studies. First, I focused on probation officers in 2009-2011. Then, for 2.5 years, actually, on juge de l'application des peines, that is French re-entry and release judges and courts. And then I focused on the third sector. And currently I'm focusing on attorneys. On my third slide, you can see a list of what has been published. Based on all these research, I haven't mentioned some of the reports that I have also published or done, particularly with the French sector. There was a big report on something called placement in the community, which is a sort of a mix between approved premises, I would say, and halfway houses. Right, and as you can see at the bottom of that page, soon, hopefully, will be released by Wolf Legal Publishers something called Offender Release and Supervision, The Role of Courts and the Use of Discretion, which I'm editing, so I only wrote a few chapters. Right, fourth slide, a general overview from the historical viewpoint of what happened in France in this field since probably the beginning. Something which is widely quoted in a lot of international publications is 1885, that's when conditional release was implemented in France. I've heard that there were parole experiments in the States before that, but for some reason people in Europe quote France as being the first to have invented conditional release. I have no idea, I'm not a historian, but anyways, for France, 1885, conditional release is invented, but at the time there is no supervision attached to it, but there is re-entry work being done exclusively by charities, third sector, but they are religious to a great extent. 1945, now that's a big jump, but obviously two world wars, so there was not much time to do anything of importance. I have to mention, it's not on my slide, but I also have to mention 1912, because 1912 is when we have our first juvenile protection law, which is inspired to a great extent by American experiments. Long story. Anyway, 1945, experimentation of the juge de l'application des peines. I'm going to call le juge de l'application des peines a JAP for this presentation. Not JAP. I make sure I'm pronouncing it the French way. JAP, juge de l'application des peines, just experimented then, and he goes to scale to the entire territory in 1958. So I usually say that this is our problem-solving court, with some of the major components of problem-solving courts. And if you want a theoretical approach comparing these two things, you can go back to the previous slide, and with the book that will be released by Wolf Legal Publishers, I am trying to explain why JAP are problem-solving courts to a great extent that went to scale, which is interesting from the problem-solving court movement, because they're always asking, well, can we go to scale? You know, won't we lose the basic the basics with going to scale and so on. So that's an interesting theoretical question as well. Anyway, when to scale at that time, because that's when we have also the Penal Procedure Code. All the rules governing these issues are in the PPC. And at this time, we also invent our version of the probation sentence, which is actually a suspended custody sentence with probation. Going back in time a little bit, 1949, that's when we create state probation. So quite late compared to England and Wales, for instance. Again, the World Wars has slowed down considerably our legislative attempts. But also, there's also an interesting factor in the French culture that it's a very, very difficult country to reform. Things just happen in the end, basically, because we just can't stop the flow of events and currents, often inspired by international trends. But when we have revolutions or wars, when that's when we suddenly have a kind of a frenzy, and the really important turning points in our history are during revolutions or world wars. So anyway, this is what happens in 1945 and in the aftermath. The movement goes on until 1958. 1993, now things change suddenly. Now, what were things like before? The JAP was a mix of a judge and a social worker, making decisions but within the prison premises, which meant he was influenced quite a lot by the prison services, and the kind of information that he obtained from the prison services were obviously behaviour based. In the open world, as we call it in French, that is in the communities, he also had a service within the tribunal, obviously. The probation service itself was actually based within the tribunal and worked with the JAP, who was actually their chief at the time, chief of service, which meant that they interacted on a daily basis, knew each other very, very well, could solve problems immediately. So that was very problem-solving court-like at the time. So that was the positive thing, but negatively, it also meant that decisions were not made with a fair trial, based on a fair trial. We didn't go that far. 1993, next step is to create a corps, as we call it in French, a profession of probation officers, which didn't exist before, because before we recruited social assistants, as we call them, basically social workers, who are welfare social workers, and on the other hand, educators don't go to university, they go to specific schools, and they often become juvenile social workers too. So in both cases, a very social worker kind of profession, with the only difference being that social assistants were called Madame No, a lot of women, and educators were called Madame Yes, they would say yes to offenders, whereas educators would be Mr. No. They were a bit more in control oriented, but nothing like today. So social workers. 1993, so new profession, and from now on they are going to be called probation and insertion counsellors, and they are recruited now via national exam, which does not look for skills, but looks for academic competence. I think it's a huge mistake that we made at the time, and I've been saying it for years, but I think we might be now unless having an ear at MOJ level. Since then we've recruited mainly lawyers. And I'm a bit of a schizophrenic there, because I complain about it, but on the other hand, I keep telling my law students, oh, you know, you've got this great profession, and you can pass the exam, it's a very interesting job, blah-de-blah. 1999, I think that's a historical mistake, that's to an even greater scale, because at the time, the prison services decided to annex, I call it a coup d'etat, to annex the, to merge, but really to swallow up the community probation. So the probation officers and their service leave tribunals from then on and go to their own building, and at times at the other end of the city. And they now, and that's when it's created, they now have their own hierarchy, medium manager, service manager. Bad enough, but the, although some of them are very good, naturally. But then the other problem is then they now are completely it immersed within the prison services hierarchy and functioning and thinking, and it's an extremely hierarchical kind of institution with a lot of constraints and quasi-military in a way. But it's the prison thinking that I'm the most concerned about, and from then on, and especially these days with the intense overcrowding problem that we have, the focus of the prison service is obviously is going to be from their angle. We have too many prisoners, which is a fact. We want you guys to spend your time preparing them for release, but not preparing them from the re-entry point of view by doing the social work that's going to allow these people to desist properly and return to society with all the support that they need. No, it's more from the legal viewpoint, and I'll return to this later. You have to prepare the measure that is going to allow these people to leave prison, and as fast as possible. So this is the big trend that started in 99, but at the time the prison services did not really have a policy for probation services. This happened later, but anyways, it was swallowed, which meant also that probation officers and services lost their links with the JAP. Now they communicate via an internal server, an internet server called API, which means they don't know each other very well, and distance is not very good with human beings, isn't it? 2004, that's some kind of the payback for what happened in 99. It's not thought of that way. It's more a general trend, and it would be too long to explain. 2004, bipartisan reforms, very rare in France. 2000, the left starts the job, the work. 2004, the right finishes it. Basically, it's to acknowledge that juge de l'application des peines, JAP, are courts of law, and that they have to decide on release and recall and all these other things in the context of a fair trial, and appeal can take place, the whole shebang of a normal, fair, equitable, in the sense of fair trial in Europe and the States, actually, system. So that's a very great progress. This is something I advocated in my PhD, for instance, for years. So very good thing. But then things start changing. 2002, 2012, we have 10 years of Nicolas Sarkozy, penal reforms, first as a Minister of Interior, then as President, more than 12 punitive laws in criminal law first, but then in 2005, he starts thinking, oh, I can also reform release and supervision, and with a punitive stand, which never happened before. And it makes supervision law, or re-entry, and we call it sentences implementation, it's a separate field, hugely, hugely complex from the technical viewpoint. Very interesting for a lawyer who likes complication, but difficult to implement in the field. Also give status to the JAP, because it's now been acknowledged that you have to be an extremely good lawyer to be able to understand this, the whole thing. But at the time, overcrowding is made even worse because of punitive law in the penal field, and it creates more pressure onto JAP to release more offenders. So JAP are perceived both as being too lenient with long sentences, they release them too much, and on the other hand, and by the same people sometimes, not releasing enough people and to solve the overcrowding problem. So it's like it's become its responsibility. Forget about the reason why we are at that point in France. So it's now for him, and now with Madame Taubira, the current MOJ, there's that pressure again. JAP are annoying because they want a release plan that's credible. They want people to have something to fall back on in terms of housing and if not a job, at least some kind of finances in place, or health coverage and treatment when that's needed. That's what they want. They want the quality and the depth, but that's not that the MOJ and the prison services are thinking of. They just want to empty beds. So there's a hospital thinking now. 2008, another important turn. They are, for 4 years, which is rare, the same team at the prison services headquarters, and they want to do criminology. So that's they've read a few stuff, and they are very annoyed at the fact that probation services know nothing of what works, and you know, core correctional practices and motivational interviewing, and they've never been trained, and all this knowledge that has accumulated has not at all penetrated France, and they want to do a bit of that, but they do it in a way that is very French, very Jacobinistic, we call it, very centralized. Everybody's got to do the same at the same point, no experimentation and evaluation, we just do everything at the same time. They suddenly center their staff a internal circular telling them, oh, by the way guys, you're all criminologists. They had no idea, hadn't got the training, quite scary actually. And I remember at the time, that's when I started my research on probation officers, they were very angry, very disturbed, and very angry about this at the time. Things have changed now. And also the prison services headquarters launched two big programs. One is actually supposedly a program, a treatment program, but it's got nothing to do with a real program, you know. So it's the whole idea is to make out, it's a communication thing, to make out that we are now endorsing what works, that we are now having risk assessment tools, but none of it is actually risk assessment tool or what works program. It's just, again, a pretense thing, and I call it the Canada Dry of criminology, which annoys probation officers a lot, so it's not a good move. 2010 decrees, and that reveals a prison services disciplinary governance turn as well at the time, which I don't have to elaborate on either, but this decree says, and following 2008, that circular, the role of a probation services is not, as we normally call it, reinsertion, so that's basically desistance. It now is only to prevent reoffending. Prevent reoffending is thus deemed as being completely different from reinsertion, which is weird, and it's not the other side of the same coin at all, it's just a separate function. So focus on control, not that we are actually controlling much, but it's the idea. Forget about social work, and that's the main thing that happens at the time. You're not social workers, and the decree in 2010 systematically, painstakingly deletes all mention of social worker for probation officer in the Penal Procedure Code. Now, we're talking about hundreds of articles there. Replaces it with the new name of probation officers. They're now going to be called Penitentiary Probation and Insertion Counselors, CPIP, the CPIP, as we call them in French. I'll use probation officer because it's easier. The CPIP, with the two important things. No, they're not social workers anymore. We're not doing social work. Well, we had quite kind of noticed, because obviously they were not doing social work at all. That's what my research has showed, but I'll go back to this. But now that's actually enacted in the law, or rather in the decree, but it's the same. And the other important turn here is to add the word penitentiary to really mark the territory. This is our flag on the moon, right? We are now fully prison services guys, even when we work in the community. If you thought you were something else, forget about it. Right, I'll go back to the current bill, so forget the end of my slide. Slide fifth, who does what? I'm going to start presenting what everybody does on paper, what the law says, and then I shall present what they do actually. Who does what on paper? Now, let's start with the JAP. They make important decisions. They can transform, we call it conversion, and that's a specific procedure that focuses a lot of attention for the JAP. It's a huge part of their job. Everybody who's sentenced to up to 2 years if they're first-time offenders, up to 1 year if they're recidivists in the legal sense, are actually not going to prison unless they got a bench warrant. So if the tribunal actually wants the person to go straight to jail, they issue a bench warrant. But if they decide not to, they know what's going to happen. The person goes and sees the JAP. The JAP thus converts the sentence. Sometimes it doesn't if there's no reinsertion elements, but massively does, and there's a lot of pressure on them to actually do it. And transform this imprisonment sentence into something else, which can be a community sentence or can be a release measure. based on the context, the circumstances of the person, whether the person has a job or not. This procedure lasts for 4 months, and this often allows the person who's got no job and no housing to look for one. It puts a bit of pressure on them, so that time is actually quite useful. Oh my God, I'm really at risk of going to prison this time. I should be doing something. So it's interesting. From the comparative point of view, it's also interesting because it looks like a very odd system, but there's a lot of sense to it. In France, you may have heard, like on other continental countries, in a lot of continental jurisdictions, we do not have two different parts in our sentencing process. The court, at the same time, in one go, decides that the person's guilty, and from this derives the sentence, but there is no debate on the sentence, and most of the time there's no pre-sentence reports. Basically, the courts are blindly determining what the sentence is going to be, and I call that a loose pattern. You know, imagine that you are defining or giving the person a huge pajama. The sleeves are far too big, the legs are too big, it's not holding properly, so it's not going to fit the person. So this is a gross determination of the sentence. And then, actually, what we do in France is that the JAP does the second phase. He's the one in charge of tailoring the sentence to the person's needs. So when you view it from that point of view, it makes a lot of sense. I'm trying to explain this in France, but of course the problem with that is that there's a lot of punitive guys out there who say this is disgusting. Custody sentences are transformed into something else, blah-de-blah. And then on the other hand, you've got a lot of people who see this as just being a way of not filling in the, and then you said hospital beds, prison, obviously cells. So that's obviously functions that this is, goals that this is meeting. But from my point of view, it's more what I've just said. This is where we do the actual sentencing work for all these people sentenced to imprisonment. Anyway, so that's a good part of the job. Then release decisions with prisoners, for prisoners, conditional release, all sorts of measures. That another peculiarity of the French system is that we have a lot of measures that the JAP chooses from. So individualization is also viewed and is mainly viewed as choosing the right measure for the right person. And you will understand this probably with another one of my slides. The JAP also decides on remission and furlough and humanitarian furlough under escort, breach issues, sanction of breach, which is not recall in all cases. We've got a host of other sanctions. I've done a lot of publications on that. For CSM, criminal record expunging, that's a very interesting task as well for those who need their criminal records to be clean when they're released. We can do that. In charge of supervision process, but it's actually the probation services that do the daily supervision, but the JAP is overall in charge of what happens. So, based on this, I've, as you can see on the slide, fair trial applies to A, B, D, and E, not with the other things, not with remission in particular. The hearings are completely informal. Now look at the picture on my slide. This is a typical JAP office. She's not wearing her robe. She's got a black dress, but she's not wearing her robe. It's a very clumsy, clotted office. There's not enough space for all the files. That's quite typical. There's loads of files opened at the same time. She's in charge of probably between 100 and 1,000 people. And you can see she's got a desk. And when the this is where the hearing takes place, so this is completely informal. The offender will face the JAP, so it's very intimate, and a lot of things happen within that context. And the other parties, like the prosecutor and the attorney, are going to be there as well in the office. So it's quite crowded, quite a crowded place, really. Right, next slide. Prosecutors, they can take offenders to court for breach cases, they can give their opinion in court, they're responsible also for the very legally complex issue of how long the sentence is. In some cases, when people have been sentenced to a variety of sentences, 6 or 7 different sentences from different place, it's the prosecutor who says, oh, by the way, Jacques, you can't release him because we've just learned of a new sentence coming from another region. And when you add them up, there's a lot of legal stuff going on. Mathematically, it's not just 1 plus 2 plus 3, much more complex. So ultimately, they're responsible for that. Next slide, probation services. As I said, are part of the prison services, work in prison as well, and in the community. They've got the same hierarchy, very military-like. A lot of constraints attached to it. They can't decide much on their own. They're not flexible at all because of that. So basically all the criticism in England and Wales around NOMS, for instance, well, I'm not sure whether it's valid with NOMS, but it's definitely the case in France with the prison services. Basically, NOMS is an outside but common institution, whereas in France the probation services are really completely part of the prison services, and this is really quite terrible. Their daily supervision is extremely loose, because officially they have, that's at least that what the prison services are giving to the Council of Europe as official data, 90 to 100 cases, but they're not taking into account those who work part-time. So really, the average case file is 130, 140, but in some areas it's worse. For instance, currently in Reims, it's 180. In Chalon-Champagne, which is the nearby city that's linked to us, we've got 200 cases per probation officer. So as you can imagine, you cannot do the work. It's just impossible. So it ends up being a tick-boxing exercise. Hi, Mr. Such and Such, how are you? Have you looked for a job? And, oh yes, you have. Well, give me the documented proof. Okay, I'll join that to the file. Have you been to your psychiatrist? No, give me the documented proof, blah-de-blah. And you want to look for a job? Well, you might want to go to that service, so here's the address. And that's what you see quite a lot. Not all probation officers are going to behave that way. The lawyers are overall, not all of them, but lawyers are going to be overall more inclined to do that kind of a job. They're very good at writing reports. The older, those who were recruited at social workers in the past who are still around, obviously do not work that way. So it's quite a different picture that you can see in services, with different people working in a different way, which is not necessarily bad. But no, the real problem is their caseload and what they can actually do. So there's no real re-entry job, there's no real supervision going on. People can sometimes see their probation officer every 2 months. Somebody's released, most of the case has no job, no housing, and I've seen a lot of people going out even without an ID or a social security coverage. Very often my local prison, and people are going to be released the next day, they've got no idea where they're going to go. So quite a sad picture. Investigations, they are supposed to be pre-conversion. So the pre-conversion report is actually the equivalent of a pre-sentence report when you think about it, because this is what, the actual sentencing work is done by the JAP. So they do pre-conversion report to the JAP, and they also do they're supposed to do. That's been very contentious, because now they're not writing a lot of report, but they used to write interim reports so that the JAP knew what was going on. They don't have the time, so they obtained from the prison services, who are in charge of writing the decrees, by the way, so they also define the law, another huge issue. They imposed on the JAP that they would, that the probation, their probational services would not write interim reports anymore, unless the JAP specifically requested in a given case, but in most cases they won't, so they don't know what's going on. They supposedly prepare prisoners for release, but actually don't. Actually, I've already told you what's going on in real life, but anyway, so who does what on paper, if I summarise? The police or gendarme, they may do investigations for the JAP. There's a kind of a, if my probation service is not good, I will ask the police. That's what they do. So if the probation service has got no time, or is not very good with its investigations, then the JAP asks the police or gendarme, or if it's a complex issue, or if the JAP needs some kind of verification on site, which the probation services don't do anymore. They just pick up their phone, they call for instance, the employer that the inmate has got or will have in the outside world, and they just check out, oh, do you really exist? If they can't, sometimes you see reports quite appalling. Oh, I tried to call him twice, and they never picked up the phone and asked about what they do. So when the Jacques really wanted to know whether there is a firm behind this job proposition, they send the police. They can't do that on a regular basis. They do this for, you know, risky dossiers. The police can arrest probationers who are in breach or flight. They execute Jacques' warrants, because obviously Jacques, being judges, can issue warrants. The third sector is in charge. Now, here come the interesting part of my presentation. They really are, I discovered, the only ones in charge of re-entry. They do the re-entry work. They give food coupons and soup. They are the ones offering housing, shelters, drug treatment. They are in charge of those placement in the community programs I told you about. They are very collaborative programs, by the way, as an exception to what actually takes place in France usually. They often supervise offenders with certain measures. They can do it with probation sentences or with community work. They can also create programs, because the third sector is very collaborative, has no problem with working with police, cities, other agencies, other charities or associations, as we call them in France, because they're secular most of the time. For instance, I'm in charge of evaluating a domestic violence program in Reims, and they're working with the police, with the tribunal, with the city, with the feminist agents, local agency, etc. They work with victims, which probation services are supposed to do but usually don't. They interact with families, which the probation services never do. I would say they do the actual job. On paper, the medical sector, we have psychiatrists. So that's slide 9, sorry. The medical sector is in charge with psychiatrists of treatment, obviously. They're referred offenders. Long story, they're not very good at it. They think in terms of obviously mental illness. So when they have to deal with sex offenders, it's a bit different, isn't it? Same issue as we have with probation services. Most of them haven't read the literature, so don't really know what they're doing. It's more Freud and all Lacan based. They are in charge of experts' reports. They are the ones in France doing risk assessment, not probation services. And most of them don't do it in a professional way, in an evidence-based way. They do it from the top of their hat, based, again, on a purely clinical exercise. So we're very backwards in this respect. So, yeah, experts' reports. I've done a research on how Jacques perceive it. Very interesting. They seem to be well aware that it's not professionally up to standards. But they're also in charge of drug treatment, of course, all other types of doctors. So, yeah, when there's drug treatments in the mainstream medical sector, that's obviously in charge of it. Attorneys, now, they present release applications, they defend offenders in recall cases, and I'll get back to what they actually do. Slide 10, in real life, probation officer services first, as you can see with the logo, Administration Pénitentiaire, Prison Services. I would say that by now, a lot of probation officers think of themselves not at all in terms of social workers, so that prison services war has been completely won, was made easy by the fact that, as I said, most of them are now lawyers. We don't have social workers, not enough. When you ask them, what is your job then, they answer, my job is to be the interface with the chef. So they see it as being a documentation, legal clerk kind of job. I'm preparing reports, I'm sending files, I'm seeing people, I'm ticking boxes, so that's one part of the job. And their administration is telling them to prevent reoffending, thinking that this is going to do the trick. They ask them also to empty prison cells and by preparing release measures. So like I said before, it's seen from a legal viewpoint. It's not like I'm going to prepare these guys in terms of housing and all that. I'm going to help the Japs see which measure is more adapted to that person. And of course I'm going to gather a bit of data. I'm going to ask the person, where are you going to live? I'm going to ask the person, is your family supportive? What's your address going to be? But this is all documentation. I'm going to write that in the file. I'm not actually going to help you look for housing. That is in most cases. I mean, other probation officers do re-entry work. It's very different, but most of them won't, especially in the most crowded prisons. They don't have time, but they also don't see it as being their job. In fact, when I did my study on probation officers, I heard a lot of them saying, it's not my job to help, which is quite scary when we think about it. So there is a huge identity crisis at the moment within probation services. They were social workers, then they were legal clerks, and that's still the dominant thing, I'm sure. But they've been told they're criminologists, but they're not criminologists at all. Some of them are now, because they've been exposed to evidence-based practices by my publications, by Dindo's publication, not Lamina, that's mentioned on the slide, has got a different approach, but he's studied probation services too, and he's PhD. The prison services has focused on Canada Dry criminology, but at least out we have made sure they know this exists. You guys ignored it, but it's there. What I also do, I'm also a teacher, so I tend to want to teach people, and what I do is I translate a lot of evidence-based articles and things in the Law Journal that I'm a member of the editorial board of. So we regularly have special criminology issues, and I translate a lot of things consistently. I've been doing it for years, so that there's now a host of things that they can read in French, because the big problem with French people is that even when they could, they refuse to read in English, but a lot of them can't. From the practical viewpoint, very little supervision. I've already said that. The reports are extremely mediocre. I mean, what I've seen is, I've never seen an actually very good, useful report, so that's another thing. I did a small-scale research once, a little bit like Cyrus's, following reports all the way up to the JAP, and not enough material to publish, but interesting in the sense that I found the same thing as Cyrus, but also I found that the reports were extremely mediocre, and that's what I still encounter because I'm in the field all the time. Probation services, and then particularly their managers, think in terms of turf. The biggest problem we have with managers is that they're not really leaders. They don't know, they can't be referees for probation officers who complain about it. Actually, if I've got a problem, if I don't know what to do with this guy, I can talk to my colleagues, but I can't talk to the managers because he won't know anything. They are managers, basically, in the wrong sense. They are more, again, administrators, organizers, but not reference in terms of knowledge. And they are themselves wondering what really is their identity. I mean, there's not any research yet on this, but that's something you come across consistently when you study all these issues, when you study JAP or probation officers. And they have a huge turf problem with the JAP, because they're all lawyers, these ones, and they're all most of them wanted to be judges. That's the problem, because we've got a national exam to select judges in France, and it's an extremely, extremely selective one, and nobody likes the person who's got the best grades in class, do we? Yeah, and a lot of jealousy, a lot of, this is my job, this is not yours, and telling the probation officers, you do not write this report to the JAP because I say so, and because who the hell does he think he is, blah, blah, blah. They also have increasingly a prison culture, a prison thinking, in terms of partnership, for instance, because the prison services is such a powerful, I've got all the money and all the guys kind of institution. They see themselves as being in charge. So I've studied partnership programs like placements in the community, which are extremely interesting things, but at the same time, sadly, the probation services saw their job as being the gendarme of the whole program. I'm in charge here, and I'm the one distributing grades now. And they saw with the partnership, so to speak, actually, because it was a vertical partnership with the probation, with the third sector, it was like, well, what I'm actually supervising here is not whether the charity is doing its work with the offenders. I don't give a monkey, sorry, pardon my French, as far as that is concerned. What I'm concerned about is whether they are actually doing exactly what I'm telling them, and if they're not, when I'm threatening them to fire them, because I'm the one who pays as well. It's not a very good kind of atmosphere, even in good programs. There's no evaluation of their work. We don't know if it works, but comparing to what works with the big W's in the general meaning of the sense, I would say is currently very unlikely. So in most cases, they do not do the desistance work. Okay, moving on to slide 11. Third sector, now you probably get the fact that they de facto do all the social, the psychological and the supportive work that probation services do not want in some cases, in a lot of cases, or do not do anymore because they do not have the time, like home house visit for instance, or that they are not allowed to do by their own administration for all the reasons that I have described before. They are the ones who are locally embedded. Now, probation services can be locally embedded too, of course. They have their own networks and things, but they do not work in partnership in a lot of cases. They can sometimes, but in most cases they do not. The third sector being much more flexible and being locally based in the first place anyway, has no problem working, and no turf issues, of course. So working with the police, yes, of course. Working with the tribunal, yes, of course. Tribunal asks me to do something, yes, well, what, yes, of course. The city is asking me, the third sector charity, yes, of course, I shall do it. Give me the money and I can, yeah, I shall find a way of doing it with a host of partners. So collaboration is never a turf issue, never a problem. They are very flexible. They can be very innovative because they do not have all this hierarchical constraints and thinking, and they don't have to ask the local, the regional, the national authority, you know, to do things. So they just do them. And another interesting thing I found spontaneously: who are they employing? Who are their workers? Now, they're not, we don't have a lot of volunteers anymore, and particularly in this field. That's a long story. I published something recently in the Probation Journal, if you want to know more. They are actually employing psychologists, social workers, precisely those that we actually need in that kind of line of work. I can't say criminologists because we do not have criminology faculties, but psychologists and social workers, yes, of course. These are the ones they're hiring. They are not hiring a lot of lawyers. And they also can do the work directly. In terms of treatment for addicts, for instance, it's often not just the medical sector. It can be the third sector, or it can be a combination of both. They are more holistic as well, and more relationship based with offenders. Now, I'm not saying everything's a bed of roses, and that they are, because you might think that by now that the probation services are the bad guys and they're the incompetent guys, and the third sector are very good and nice guys and very competent. It's much more complex than that, obviously. In the probation services, you have wonderful people who would like to do much more, they can't. You have some very innovative people, and I'm not saying they can do a lot, but they try. And in the third sector, you also have some people who are do-gooders and ignorant and incompetent and just doing anything, but not really. So, I mean, you have a contrasted picture, but overall, I would still say that the probation services have got huge structural problems, and they're so big, these problems, that I can't see things changing, at least sufficiently, for things to get better. So I'm placing more, I mean, if I was a politician, I would place my money on the third sector, definitely. They could acquire competence in the cases where they do not possess it, and they are actually looking for trainings in various ways. So, but if I summarise, they are the ones who are truly in charge of re-entry and assistance, that's for sure. Slide 12, the JAP. Nationally, the problem is they're constantly under attack by the executive. Now, that's something else. The prison services nationally, also luckily, locally, I'll get back to this, the prison services would like to get rid of the JAP altogether and would like to make the decisions in their stead. or return to the pre-2004 system, which is what they're actually doing by drafting the bill that Madame Taubira, the current MMOJ, is about to present or has presented at the Parliament that's going to be discussed in June, going back to pre-2004 without fair trial. The JAP will have to decide again within the prison services, without the offender being present, without an attorney, without any fair trial, to be able to fast process people out of jail without looking for a credible plan. Oh God, forget about that. You know, it costs, you know, it's too time consuming. We just need these guys out. Prison services, therefore, with the hospital beds logic, and I can understand why, because yeah, they are facing overcrowding on a daily basis, but this is not the way. But you know, because these guys are going to come back if you don't do the job. They are. No housing, no health coverage, no work, no actual work on their thoughts, no programs, no cognitive behavioral therapy, no MI, nothing is done. Of course these guys are going to come back if we're not even attempting to do something. So this is extremely sad, really sad. And what's sad is that some JAP are actually now embracing this kind of thinking, you know, especially in the Paris region where overcrowding is terrible. Locally, there are also turf issues, as I said, with probation service managers. There's some probation officers too, but more with managers. And they too would like to get rid of the JAP and make the decisions themselves. The idea that this is a separation of power that offenders need in terms of legitimacy of justice, a fair trial, and that this can have a positive criminological impact on compliance, for instance, is not the issue. We want these guys out. Oh, they might come back, Herzog Evans says. Nah, forget about Herzog Evans' argument. Yeah, well, we'll deal with that when they come back, right? And then we'll probably fast process them out again. So, yeah, Sharp had a strong resistance culture, I have found. They can tell you exactly what it takes to desist. They know exactly what the desistance factors are and what the process entails, and that it's a zigzag process. They are very, very knowledgeable, even though they haven't read any desistance literature, which is quite fascinating. If you want to know more about this, do read my book. But they are pressurized by the prison services, various things that the prison services are doing to kind of push them to release more people regardless of the context of the person, force them to sign protocols whereby, for instance, the JAP accept, okay, I will decide without you guys writing a report, or okay, I accept not for you guys not to write interim reports, I will accept that you guys never do house visits, you know, all these things, which bottom line means that the JAP are supposed to accept that probation services are not doing the job. Of course, because they have such a huge caseload themselves, they cannot see offenders regularly enough. They had a strong symbolic desistance understanding, but they cannot really do the job themselves either, even though I think that just the fact that we have JAP is still very important. Remove that, huge thing is going to disappear, because there's still problem-solving courts in many ways. Not in all ways, but in many ways. Slide 13, the police is never associated to programs or actions with the probation service, and that would be a no-go. But the probation services, so the probation services do not know whether the guy is actually hanging out with dealers, for instance. And the police does not know what the probation services is doing. So that's a problem, isn't it? But it can be very different with the third sector. As I said, they have a collaborative attitude. They can work in programs with the police. It's not an issue for them. Yeah, all right, that's quite interesting. Let's do this. And this is what I'm currently seeing with the domestic violence program in Rains. But I think the police could do more. Prosecutors are in a very interesting institution, so to speak. They work collaboratively within their tribunal. Some of them are extremely innovative, like the guy who's on the photo, who's my colleague, Jean-Philippe Vicentini, by the way, because he's also an associate professor at my university, but he's a prosecutor in Beauvais and was formerly in Combray, and has launched very interesting programs called Reinforced Probation, which he had to relabel Reinforced Support, because the probation services are now at war with him. Who the hell do you think you are? This is our job, blah-de-blah. He's actually not supervising them per se, but he's managed to make the city fund his program. So he found the money. He hired what he calls coordinators, who are guess what, psychologists or social workers, and they actually add, it's called reinforced, but really it's added support. That's how it should be called. It's not in order to control people more, it's in order to give them more qualitative support in terms of looking for a job, finding a job, in terms of housing, you know, what should be done with everybody. So, but currently, both in Cambrai and in Beauvais, he's facing a trench war by the probation services. They're actually mad. You guys are incompetent, you don't know what you're doing. We are the only competent people out there. Some of my students are currently evaluating this design program, the research program, obviously. So we've been working on this for 2 years, and it's very, very, very sad and stupid, really, what's going on there. So anyways, they can be a huge driving force in collaborative resistance programs. Not all of them, of course, but when they do, they are. Mr. Vicentini here for these two jurisdictions, and in my city, Reims, Mr. Belargent. Slide 14, general practitioners in real life again. They are often in charge of addicts and mentally ill people, but they are overloaded too. They're probably not very competent because, as I said, they're more very Freud and Lacan oriented, but some of them can develop therapeutic alliances. And I know for a fact that in drug rehabs, you have often collaborative work and a very multifocal approach with sometimes CBT, with molecules like methadone, for instance. We've got good communities for for release. It's kind of sober living, and they can use motivational interviewing. I know that a lot of medical doctors have been trained in MI. So yeah, I mean, a lot of good things. I would say the same thing. The psychiatrists, more difficult. I don't think they get good results. Most of them are Freudian, as the Ratter and Halligan article shows. Attorneys. Now that's the current research I'm conducting with my students, as usual. I'm trying to find two things. First, do they play a part in the resistance process, even if it's a small part, and what kind of what do they do, actually? In what sense do they help? And the second thing, I'm trying to test a typology which appears in my JAP research, because I interviewed 32 attorneys for that particular research. And it seemed to me that there were two categories of attorneys, holistic attorneys and classic attorneys. The holistic ones are like home birth midwives that sort of follow the person and the family as a whole, from the very beginning, sometimes from the police precinct, all the way up to after the person's released sometimes, and still interact with the people. So they build a relationship with the offenders and their families. They really actively support with the preparation of the release plan. Some do make phone calls to, for instance, I don't know, the probation services, and job centre plus and all that. They try and really help. They can be proactive. Whereas classic lawyers, well, they prepare the files, they do their defence job, and it can be very important. They Superman sometimes, but they do not follow the person throughout the sentence. They do not interact with families. They do not have this active role. And what my research so far is showing is that it's not so clear-cut. It's not like we have holistic and classic attorneys. There's a whole continuum, actually. There's a lot of classic attorneys who are bordering on the holistic. They would like to be fully holistic. They do not have the time. It's not financially possible. More later in my publications. And on these two photos, you have two of my friends, Boisel and Bianchi, two at the Paris Bar, who are fully fledged holistic lawyers. Now, slide 15. So to summarise, the real problems that we have are that we are not doing collaborative work, there are turf issues, job is done sequentially and with people working parallel to each other and without communicating, a lot is lost. There's tensions with managers, tensions in terms of goals, desistance with JAP, preventing reoffending with probation services, welfare with third sector, tensions with the issue of documented proof. I don't have to elaborate, but you can read that in my book. Tensions with Zapp's decisions, deemed too lenient in some cases, not lenient enough in others. They're too careful with some cases, and the Notskers, they are not careful with others. At least that's what people are saying. The probation service, thinking in terms of monopolistic gendarme of the whole process. When they collaborate, it's always vertical. I decide, you do. My viewpoint is that probation and resistance and reentry are nobody's property. It should be a joint effort. And who does the job, basically? Thank you. Thank you for doing it. So you can have more on that, but in French, on the website of my association, the French Probation Confederation, which has this motto. Our mantra is collaboration, collaboration, collaboration. Slide 16, you need to understand to understand the French system and the French sort of dead ends in where we are at, that in France, social issues are changed by laws, by new laws, or at least that's what French people think. The real issues are not addressed. We're not thinking in terms of, there's a problem, what can we do to solve it? We think in terms of, there's a problem, therefore we need to change the law. For instance, the current MOJ believes that a new community sentence called contrainte pénale, which is a probation order, called penal constraints, though, to make out it's punitive, long story, will miraculously make sentencing courts not pronounce custodial sentences. Well, this has been tried in the whole world and it's never worked. Heard of the the expanding of the nets kind of thing. They also think that miraculously it'll be more credible than the current probation I described. Well, no, what you need to do is do the work, do the reentry work, do the pre-release preparation plan work, do the supervision work, use probation evidence-based practices that you never do, create, obviously, hire a lot of probation officers because you don't have enough, or work with more actively with the third sector who can. Which can do the job, but no, they're not seeing the issue in those terms. They're seeing this issue in terms of, oh well, we need a new law and that's going to do the trick. The failure is predictable, obviously, and I've been crying, shouting as loud as I can in the media, in my publications, in Twitter, wherever, that this is obviously going to fail, but people don't listen because, again, the culture is, oh, new law, things will change. Reality changes via bills, and that's why I've got so many laws. Slide 17. Also linked to this, France is very different from the rest of the world in the sense that we do not think in terms of programs. We think in terms of legal framework. That's related to what I've just said. So we don't solve and we don't perceive release and supervision in terms of, let's create a program, a collaborative one. We see it in terms of, oh, okay, we need a new measure, a new sentence. They do not address the real issues. They do not address the real professional practices, skills, recruitment, training issues. Even though there's a little bit of that going on at the MOJ at the moment, but the way it's done is, again, well, forget it. I'm not going to go there. Slide 18. So another one is that release is always better than prison. Now, of course, I prefer a good release measure and a good release plan and program, but they are not thinking in those terms that I've just described. So it's not a content, what do we do to support offenders, how do we help them find housing and employment, how do we make them ready for employment, do we change their cognition? All this is completely ignored. It's more in terms of, oh, these guys are going to be happier outside. You know, and this is a lot on the left, I have to say. Who are you to say that they're better off in prison? No, I'm not saying they're better off in prison. I'm saying keep them in prison, prepare the release plan, work collaboratively with them, all the agency and their families, and make sure these guys are not coming back. But no, so they do not see that there's also a risk of massive probation, that probation can be painful, see Dunescu, that, you know, that there's a lot of offenders who prefer prison than harsh probation measure, and the current MOJ law is focusing on more control, but not in terms of better support. And in particular with people who've got personality disorders, see Ramsden and Lowton, this is not this is too simplistic. That's all I'm trying to say. Too simplistic. Slide 19. So, yeah, here's the future of French probation. The currently debated bill, new community sentences with more constraints, no more support, and we're not changing anything with probation services, but not new. The police will be able to detain people serving SCSM. It's already the case. Forget about collaboration with the police, though. There's going to be a virtually automatic early release system where we go back to before 2014 without fair trial, and to hell with Tyler. French probation officers, though, and that's positive, are currently gradually opening their minds to evidence-based practices. We're definitely not there yet, but getting there a little bit. They've heard a few of the criticisms, so a bit of hope there. But there might be a general reform of judiciary which might eliminate the JAP altogether. This is pending too. And I hope the third sector will continue its professionalisation trend. Now, conclusions, slide 20. We do need radical reforms, in my opinion. This is what I'm shouting here. Cut the institutional ties between prison and probation, because this is what's creating all this damage. Change recruitment. People with skills rather than with diplomas in such and such. But we need more social workers and psychologists, and definitely not any more lawyers. We've got enough. Even if Dunesh's recent article on skills, probation officer skills, is interesting, 40% of probation officers in Romania are lawyers, and he says, well, they are actually acculturated in their offices, but it depends on how the offices are. It's because they're open, on they don't have closed offices. Science and probation and evaluation, evidence-based practices, we definitely need that. We need to evaluate what we do. We actually need to create some kind of a blueprint of what this is what we do, and then we can evaluate it. We definitely need to be more modest, not a French trait, I'm afraid, and ask for help in Europe in particular to import evidence-based practices. And we definitely need to learn to collaborate. Remember Tony Blair mantra that makes people laugh in England when I praise Tony Blair, but at least his two basic mantras for probation services, evidence-based A and B, collaboration. Well, I mean, the guy completely got it, and this is definitely what we need in France. Thank you.